Last week, the governor had a press conference laying out some of the changes to how they're looking at the metrics for the beginning of trying to bring kids back into school. So I thought we'd bring Andy Grzeszkowiak, superintendent of Sayosaw Schools, in today to talk about some of these changes. And Andy, one of the biggest concerns for people in the past has been, you know, we're a rural county, we're a rural area out here. And it seems like we are forced to eat the steak that the rest of Lane County is serving. How is that changing, or is it changing with this new look?
So it's not really changing, because when we look at the overall metrics, county health is also measuring the local, you know, by zip code number underneath. And so when you take the per 100,000 count and boil that down to the Florence area and kind of a per 10,000 count, we were on pace in late September and early October with, you know, two or three cases per week. So we were matching the regular county rate, just like. And so when you take it as a fraction of, we're doing the same here locally as we were overall. And again, they've had some bigger blooms around the university, but the general community function has been the same.
Do they change the frequency with which they're looking at the metrics, or how is that a new way being calculated?
So the calculation method is a little bit different. Previously, we were looking at a week total, basically Sunday through Saturday. We look at it on Monday, and we were looking at three consecutive weeks and following the pattern week by week by week. Now we are looking at a cumulative total of 2 weeks, of the last 2 weeks together every Monday. And what that's doing is, by adding these together, you're getting less of a snapback. Is that if there's a radical change in 1 week, the previous week that it's linked to kind of buffers that out. So when schools begin to operate on campus, there's going to be less of a rush to close or change models.
What is happening now? How does that look for the near future and the not so distant future for possibly getting students back in school?
So what we are planning on right now is looking at how limited in-person instruction runs on campus, bringing in groups of between 10 and 20 students in a cohort group for up to 2 hours at a time. Because right now we're in the new what's called transitional group, where your county case metrics are in this cumulative total between 100 and 200. Until that drops below 100, you really can't have groups of kids on campus for longer than a two-hour period. And so, again, we're laying out that structure right now, so that when we're ready to go, we can actually move. And November's a horrible time to actually kind of lay this out, because we're coming out the end of the quarter. Next week is a 3-day school week. We've got Veterans Day. Then we come back and we've got a full week, and then we go to Thanksgiving, and then all of a sudden it's December. And so we're really looking at trying to make some inroads for the first part of December to kind of get people prepped for more on-campus time in January. So we'll start having probably some small groups in December.
With the distance learning model, have you been able to overcome some of the obstacles there, like internet and things like that, for more rural people? Or is that still kind of a main issue?
That is still kind of a main issue. We've been able to overcome quite a bit of it, but I think that's part of the pressure, you know, statewide. Because when you really sat and listened to the governor's press conference, it was, you know, kids don't have internet connection. I mean, districts have done a fairly decent job getting kids devices. But again, if you're out in Eastern Oregon, you might be 40 miles from the nearest cell tower. I can give you 10 hotspots. If you're 40 miles from a cell tower, that doesn't matter.
Right.
And again, I think our local companies here, and even the affiliates of the national companies, have been really good at trying to get people hooked up. But it takes time. And that's the problem. And kids don't have time when school's running.
Now, I've talked with Chris Johnson. I'm not talking sports yet, but I will get to that. But I talked to Chris Johnson about, you know, the learning curve for, you know, teachers and students on this a little bit. But everybody's learning this new this new system. How right. are the kids overall doing with getting this new system without the social interaction?
I think on the academic side, most of them are doing fairly well with it. And again, there are some students that are struggling with not having that face-to-face interaction connection with the teacher and other students. And that's a concern. And because again, there's things that happen in a classroom in terms of, you know, kind of watching and observation and body cues that you cannot pick up on, you know, on a video, on a video chat, basically.
Right.
That's hard to do. And that's where, again, like limited in-person instruction, you can do some supplemental work with students, bringing them onto campus. And that's kind of the runway onto more on-campus work.
Well, and I imagine, too, there's in simplistic terms, there's sort of an osmosis that happens in a classroom that doesn't require the same amount of discipline that sitting at home in your room with a computer does.
Correct, yes. Because in a classroom, again, you can ask the teacher the question, you can listen to somebody else ask the question, or maybe you ask a student next to you for clarification. So there's a bit of a kind of a collaborative effort sometimes to learning. You know, I've got a nephew right now up in Clackamas that's doing this. And actually, my mother is the one who is sitting with him because my, you know, sister and brother-in-law are working. And, you know, keeping a seventh grade boy on task on the computer for, you know, 3-4 hours a day is difficult. And again, so you've got a retired teacher sitting with a seventh grade boy trying to get him to do his work. And if he wasn't there, I'm sure it would be video games and kittens and out riding the quad and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't change with an 11th grader either.
Exactly.
I'll tell you that. That's that age. And it, again, it's a discipline thing. And I don't know, you know, I'm not saying kids are less disciplined than we were growing up, but they certainly have more distractions.
Easy to get pulled away when you're on your own, or it's just you and a computer. And again, you can go back and maybe you can watch part of a pre-recorded lesson, or the worksheet is saved and you can go look at the notes later. Then there's not a sense of kind of urgency to get it done. When you're in a classroom, you've got this finite window. Bell one rang, you're in there, teacher and you in the class are there. 45 minutes later, the next bell rings and you're moving to the next class. So there is a bit of sense of urgency of being live and in person, and accountability, because you're there face to face with somebody that's saying, this is what we're working on today, as opposed to having your grandmother or your aunt or your uncle, or maybe you're left kind of your own devices. And then it's, man, I'll get this done when I feel like it. That's the problem with some of the distance stuff. Yeah.
Or then you have a student who maybe struggles a bit more than his friend does, and his friend does really well, gets done, and then distracts the student who doesn't do as well.
Yes.
And that's, you know, and he thinks, well, just my friend having fun, but he doesn't understand that his friend's done the work and he's left not doing the work.
Right. And again, this is kind of the analogy we make again with kind of with sports, is that practice, but some people need more practice to become proficient. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the same thing in math as it is sometimes in the weight room. You just don't go in and throw 300 pounds on the bar and start lifting, or you don't do it once and expect to get the max.
Right.
If you don't get the problem the first time, you might have to work it 2 or 3 times to kind of figure out what's going on. Some people may get it the first time, and that's kind of the way it is. But when the first person gets it the first time and then starts running around the weight room, distracting everybody else, nobody else gets anything done. Same thing in a classroom.
So you brought up the sports analogy, and I talked with Chris Johnson a little bit. We talked about the schedules being up for volleyball and basketball and football and that. Are we being over-realistic, if that's such a thing, thinking that we're going to get sports in beginning in January?
I don't know. I think it could be, because we've got other areas that we normally, you know, kind of have sports relationships to, where we travel to and they travel to us. And again, they're small distance. They're usually, again, we don't go much beyond, you know, Coos County. We don't go much into, you know, Lincoln County. You know, and
And with basketball, I think Marist is going to be the only one that might be a question mark.
Right.
You know, because they're in the Eugene area.
Yeah, and so right now there hasn't been a big shift in OSAA. We're still looking to kick off the winter season December 28. Again, and kind of with some limited in-person instruction, we're working on kind of a rotation of voluntary practices, you know, for mid-November to start get, you know, at least kids get together and do kind of some workout stuff in a safe, supervised manner. And then we'll see where the state goes with it, because it's going to be the OSA Health Board, their medical advisory group, that really makes the, I think, the final decision in this.
But under the current metrics, is it not, am I not right in saying that volleyball and basketball currently would not be allowed under the current metrics because it's done indoors?
It could be done indoors, but it would be limited spectatorship. Mm-hmm. Spectators would have to be 6 feet apart, maximum capacity to the gym, and you have to have like some distancing on the bench. And then looking at that kind of additional, basically kind of having the doors open to get an airflow through. And again, you also have to have a consistent, you know, kind of like gym policy from school to school to school that you're competing in. Otherwise, you're going to have one school show up and have, you know, a packed gym of 500 people, and one school walk in and go, I thought this was going to be, you know, 50 people one side, 50 people the other, and then turn around and walk out.
Yeah.
And that's stuff the athletic directors are working on now, is common agreement for gym operations.
Yeah. Well, at best, you know, we still have hope, right?
Yes, we do.
And that's the one thing we can look forward to. And again, you know, if things change, we certainly would like to have you come in and explain some things to us, because, you know, it's even though you watch the governor's news conference, it doesn't always necessarily break down into what that means for Western Lane County. You kind of
right.
have to, you know, whittle through some of the information to find that out.
So. Yeah, because again we talk about Florence being a rural area, and for all aspects it is, but you know the question is, why are we lumped in with the rest of the county? And when you look at, again, we're kind of an artery from the valley coming out. Mm-hmm. 101 runs north and south, and we have a lot of people that commute to and from Florence for work, and so we're fairly well integrated with the rest of the county. You know, so when I asked that question, you know, way back in, I think, in August, about why aren't we considered rural? Why don't we have the rural exemption? And they're like, you're within, you know, 50 miles of everything else, and you've got people that travel back and forth. And it's like, yeah. Okay, so we're in. So we have, instead of having, you know, a plane be a vector, we've got cars going around every day. So.
And it's just like this last week, you know, 3 cases was a 10% increase from
right.
what we had already.
Right.
So from 31 to 34, I mean, just about 10%.
Yeah. And again, as we're looking at getting kids, you know, back onto campus, as much as we want kids back on campus, we have parents that, you know, stated in August, my kid's not coming back to campus until there's like a legitimate medical intervention. So part of what we're doing is we're going to have to look at, again, we've got staff that have medical concerns that can't be on campus, trying to pair those kids up with those teachers to do nothing but distance learning, and then looking at what we can do with the busing limitations for bringing kids in and maintaining the safe cohorts on campus for time. So there's a lot of logistical pieces in the mix.
So for the foreseeable future, probably through the end of even the school year, we're going to see some distance learning
right.
with some students.
Yeah. Oh,
regardless.
Yeah. Because again, we've got, you know, even at the, you know, our early numbers at the elementary were about 20% of the parents said, my kids aren't coming back to campus until, you know, there's a vaccine or some other medical intervention. And so when you got 1/5 of your students in that, you're going to have to dedicate a fifth of your staff to taking care of that group.
All right. Andy Griskowiak, thank you so much for getting us updated. It's good information. Wish it was more clear, you know,
yes.
but we have what we have.
Okay, yes, thank you. And, we'll, and as we get more material from ODE and OHA, I'll let you know.
I appreciate it.
Thank you
so
much.
Stay tuned for more Our Town coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. This is the November edition of Our Town on Coast Radio.